try to kill us, but my village too strong. Long live the people. Here we go again with the bullshit you want. Long live the people.
We have all these mixed blood people over across the country. We cannot exclude them.
There's nothing wrong with being Red River Métis.
We are all Métis.
There was an attempt to define Métis. And we said no.
There's Métis from Red River. What's wrong with Métis from someplace else? And they were also Métis people.
Uniting our people is at a very sad state.
We are all Métis.
All right, welcome to The Jig Is Up. With me, as always, is Jason. And we have a very special guest joining us today. Dr. Sebastian Millett, thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me. It's quite an honor.
And Jason, how are you doing tonight?
Not bad, staying frosty in the Great White North.
Well, that's good.
How are things in your neck of the woods there, Seb? Well, you know, in Anishinaabe, unceded land, Ottawa, and the weather is pretty nice, and you know, it's starting to cold a little bit. The kids are all to sleep now, so we can have a chat about the mini subject that I think it's on our mind. So it's a great time. It's a great time.
That's fantastic. And we want to recognize that it is, I think it's officially Louis Riel Day today. So congrats on that for everybody. And hope everybody took some time to think about that and maybe even take part in a few events today. But let's just jump right into things. So Sebastian, maybe for the listeners who aren't familiar with you, which probably are very few, maybe just tell us a little bit about yourself and what you're doing and why, I guess, what motivates you to keep going with this stuff.
Well, I'm a French Canadian Métis, raised like that by my dad. You know, in my life was, you know, not necessarily the most glamoury life. My father was a poor man, working class poor man, but rich in his heart, and raised me as a proud half-breed or Métis for different terms. And basically, it was an important part of my life, and I always try to make sense with it. And that's especially something today as we remember Louis Riel's day on the November 16th today. So It's a kind of a blessing to be on your show on that day, to be honest with you. And so basically, I grew up in different parts of Quebec. My family's from Southern Ontario. We belong to a cluster of Métis there that are often referred historically as the Muskrat French. They are the descendant of some of the first Métis community in the sub, in the Midwest, the sub to the Great Lakes. So I'm part of that community as well, as we know that, you know, the clusters of French Indigenous families that have created and, you know, quite significant communities there in the Midwest. So that is from the historical part of my background. Now I work at the University of Carleton as a prof of law and legal studies. And I'm busy trying to understand Métis culture, Métis legal aspect, and I'm trying to understand, you know, the mix with colonialisms as well. So basically that's what I'm trying to do, and I put emphasis in my work about the Eastern Métis, or the most ostracized community in the Métis community, you know, in Métis culture. Why am I doing that? To go swinging back to my dad. I remember as a kid, my dad used to say to me, if there's an oppressed people around you, know that this is your people, son. So I'm trying to follow his lead there and understand that there's Métis in the East that are suffering very badly, not only from their fight with the governments and their fight for recognitions, but now what has been very hard for me to understand and to realize is that they're also fighting cousins and other Métis communities and people across this land as, you know, being fake or being this or being that. And I was surprised by that rhetoric at first, so I decided to jump right in and to study the phenomena. And this is leading me where I am now, I guess. That's great, Sam. And that kind of tees up right into one of the reasons we felt it was so important to have you on the show is you recently published a paper kind of rebuffing what was, I guess, talked about at a university in your area. Can you give us a little bit of the lowdown of how that came about?
Well, so So basically what happened is that at the University of Montreal on, if I'm not mistaken, September 27th, there were a conference presented by a professor called Dr. Leroux, Daryl Leroux. And basically his conference was like a negation, one could argue, of the historical existence of Eastern Métis. And I've seen some of Dr. Leroux's argument before these conferences, so I know a little bit what he was up against in terms of his argument. And I was alarmed by a number of people coming to me, you know, what's going on with this conference? What is that type of negations of the existence of, you know, Métis in the East? And we do exist, and a lot of people got worried with that, obviously, you know, because negating the existence of someone, it's quite strong statement. It's quite deep, right? It can cause a lot of anxiety for sure. So anyways, that conference didn't go well, in my opinion. And so I decided to write a paper as a response to it. First and foremost, because in Trahir, which is a French journal, a PhD student decided to write kind of a review of that conference, and she was praising it all over the moon, basically saying that it was such a good conference, and you know those fake Métis in Quebec, they're just like trying to play indigenous, and they're stealing the rights of true indigenous people out east, and basically it's just folklore and stuff like that, and prejudice, and basically you can see between the line that these people would be stupid to claim to be Métis.
Wow.
So on that note, I wrote to the Trahir journal and I said, could I present my arguments? And Trahir has accepted that. So I did a paper in French first. And after that, some Métis came forward and said, can we have, you know, a translation for that? Because it's very important for us to understand these arguments as well. And so we did, with the help of Rémy there. We translated the paper to make it accessible for everybody online, so everybody can make their own mind about the arguments.
So, in your opinion, like, what are some of the, I guess, the main talking points that the guys like Daryl Leroux and other academics use that, you know, that are kind of like the top three or top five kind of things that they use to discredit Eastern-based Métis?
Well, usually they will go for, it's, you know, we can go into complexities. But usually the point is that they believe in a doctrine, what I call is a doctrine or an ideology, right? About or trying to present the fact that it is essentially a nationalistic consciousness that is born only out west that would guarantee Métis identity. So their first spin is to assert or to posit that the only true indigenous Métis identity you can have is out of a collective or a nation born in Red River. So they're really adamant about this, right? It would be about the specific historical, you know, circumstance of Red River that would have been sufficient and politically geared enough to make these people emerge. Outside of that people, says a scholar like Chris Anderson, for example, you know, well known for this position. He wrote a book, Métis, about it. His book is Métis 2014 at UBC Press. So basically in his book, he says, well, look, the people outside of that nation, that Red River Nation, are mixed blood. And they are only that mixed blood, right? They are not part of the Métis nation. They will never be part of that Métis nation. And he even goes to town with this, calling them soup kitchen, you know, a disenfranchised blurb of people that now are falling back on the term Métis because it's politically convenient or it's legally convenient to do so. So that is the first kind of hard spin that they are given into this. And it's quite popular these days because the language of nation is so prevalent among indigenous people that it's, it makes a lot of sense, you know, to say, well, yeah, there's on the one hand a nation, and on the other hand, well, everybody, you know, so goes the argument, everybody's a little bit mixed. So, and that doesn't cut it in terms of culture, and it doesn't cut it in terms of indigeneity. So all these French Canadian having one drop of indigenous blood or finding somewhere in their trees that they would have some indigenous blood, well, these guys are just like, they're not Métis, they're certainly not part of the Red River, and they're moreover kind of opportunist to do so. And it goes even further than that when it suggests, for example, that these guys would be in fact racist to hurt the Métis nation by taking a false identity. So there's even accusation of cultural appropriation, fakeness, and not being true to themselves, which is a very hard rhetoric, as we can all imagine. So that is kind of the first spin by which I would suggest LaRue then comes in and pursue this task of finding those fakes, right, in Quebec. So he alleges, right, of finding those fakes or those people that are problematic according to him. And then he points to a number of cases of people claiming to be Métis, and then he goes into their narrative, and then he shows, look, these people have bad intention, and therefore moving very quickly on examples that might be problematic. Sometimes we can agree with him on that, but he moves very quickly to the argument that, in fact, there's no Métis whatsoever in the East and in Quebec. And I would suggest that then basically he argues that all the Quebecois that are claiming to be Métis have ill intention or bad intention, or sometimes they may not have those bad intention, but they're kind of in a double ignorance by which, like, and they don't know what they should know, right, about their identities. So that is kind of the spin.
One of the things that got a lot of press out our way, Seb, was some of the inflammatory numbers that were being thrown about, you know, 250% increase in Métis identity in Quebec. Is that something you can speak to?
Well, yeah, surely. I mean, what happened is that when this conference was supposed to, well, it did happen at the University of Montreal, but it was known by the Métis Federation of Canada, for example, which part of their politics is to recognize Métis all across Canada, right, if I get this right. And part of their policy is to recognize Métis people per their own culture. So basically to create this table by which we kind of understand that there's different Métis group across Canada with cultural differences, but there's no way we can create a table by which we can all sit together to see what we have in common if we don't allow that diversity to be expressed in ways that people are expressing it themselves, right? So to make sense of it. So anyways, that Métis Federation of Canada got a hold on that conference, and they wrote a letter to complain directly to the University of Montreal about this, saying that this conference of Dr. LaRue shouldn't go forward because it's basically, you know, hatred publicity against a group or an ethnic group, in this case, the Métis of the East, as to depict them as fake, as false, as people that are confused about their identity. And it goes bigger than this, because then Dr. LaRue's statement is claiming that the Eastern Métis are also a danger for the sovereignty of the First Nation in the East. So that creates a hostile environment in which, like, lateral violence can happen or fights between indigenous people out East that will certainly, you know, be panicked by these kinds of arguments. And the number that you're referring to is that for Dr. LaRue, the way to explain this instrumentalization of Métis culture in the East is by showing the growth of the Métis population in the East, right? So basically, he started his paper, or at least announced his paper, by saying that the growth in Quebec was of the magnitude of 258%. And what happened is that these numbers were debunked basically as wrong by a people in the NSC, if I get this right. And I was asked to check these numbers myself by a number of people, and they were not correct. The 258% was in fact 100 points over. It was more of the numbers of 158% and not 258%. And again, this is if you cut the number in two. And by cutting the number in two, what I mean by this is that there's different census with different questions. And the way in which Dr. LaRue has kind of given an interpretation of those numbers, he went only for the people identifying themselves as Métis in Quebec, leaving aside the people that said that they had ancestry of Métis people. And now this category disappeared along the way. And so those numbers are kind of, it's easy to play with those numbers to show like big curves. Now, there's no doubt that there's an increase in Quebec in terms of Métis identification. But the fact that these numbers were wrong from the get-go, and then not only wrong, but when it was signaled by not only the people of the NSC, but furthermore, CBC, through their reporter, questioning Dr. LaRue about that, he said at first, you know, well, these numbers and everything that I did was published. So by peer-reviewed scientific process, so they're not reproachable. And he soon realized that this argument of authority, I assume, would lead him nowhere. So basically the number were then shift down, right, to 150%. And that was before, you know, we got to remember, guys, that this was before that these numbers of 2016 were released. You know, so we were dealing with number prior to the last stats that we had. Anyway, so it went all over the place in terms of numbers. But these numbers were important for the demonstration of Dr. LaRue because this is what he based his argument on in terms of the intent. Because for him, Dr. LaRue, this big increase of Métis identification bears the mark of an instrumentalization of that identity. So it is not enough to say that the growth is a growth. For Dr. LaRue, this growth is a growth because there's people that have evil intention toward like hijacking Métis identity. Or they're maybe not aware of it when he started to shift his argument a bit in this conference. But that's what they do nevertheless, he argues, right? So basically, we are here making what I've called in my paper a genetic sophism, which is kind of an argument you cannot demonstrate. It's just impossible to go into the head of people, let alone like a population, an entire population, and psych them out and saying, well, I know the reason why all these people identified as Métis, and I'm going to tell you right now, it's because these intention is planted in their head, and me, as a sociologist, I can read them for you. I mean, that cannot happen. Not in the way he has tried to do it, that's for sure. So we've called Dr. LaRue in our paper on this generalization and then this sophist. And then we got further down the rabbit hole, so to speak, in terms of argument after that, right? So.
Perfect. Because I have seen that it has been used to be quite alarmist. We've seen that the whole inflation numbers got thrown around quite a bit to create quite a bit of controversy. Since the census has come out, have you had a chance to review any of the actual numbers?
Well, you know, there has been a lot of discussion, and it's quite interesting to see, you know, you probably saw, as I did, you know, the panic of David Chartrand there going nuts with Ontario because their number got so big, and he says, you know, there's no way you can explain this number of Métis rising even in Ontario. And then suddenly we can see that there's some tensions in Ontario right now, you know, about, you know, their own communities, their own cultures, and then what seems to be central power of the MNC at this point, the Métis National Council. So that's an interesting topic in and of itself. Of course, a number did get, you know, up in terms of Quebec and in terms of other provinces. What seems fascinating to me is that these numbers are up basically all across the different provinces. So there's a strong awareness or a strong movement of claiming back Métis identity. Now, that can be explained in various ways. You know, these there's a movement out there to try to discredit any kind of rising of Métis except out west for specific reason, and we can get to that. But yeah, so basically we have new numbers, the numbers are up, and now what we have is that these numbers are what they are, but there's a number of people out there that would claim that these numbers are significant because they show that there's evil people around or fake people around in the East or French Canadian with a drop of Indigenous blood that are making those number increase, right? And in that regard, these people would threaten, they would threaten the Métis Nation, as per my argument prior with Chris Anderson, for example, suggesting that this nation is unique in and of itself in its West only per some kind of political consciousness. Now, the problem is that with these kinds of arguments is that you cannot show that either. Political consciousness is a very fluid concept. And if we go back to Louis Riel, for example, on this special day, we can see that the politics of Louis Riel was very different from this Western-centric vision, arguably, right? The conceptions of Louis Riel of the Métis was way more open, inclusive, and fluid. And this is why also we have tried to demonstrate in this paper that we have published online is that not only the methods by which Dr. LaRue is suggesting that the Métis people in the East are fake, you know, so we went after his method showing that he's using paralogisms, which is basically inference that cannot be checked by fact, in our opinion. But also, we have argued that Dr. LaRue doesn't know Métis culture. In terms, he doesn't know what Riel said about Métis culture. He doesn't know what Gabriel Dumont said about Métis culture. He doesn't know, for example, that there's Métis families in the East, in the Outaouais region, so Ottawa region, right where I am right now, that did host and protect Louis Riel while he was in exile. And these Métis family were culturally Métis, describe it as Métis, sometimes hurt by colonial authorities because they were Métis. And you know, these names are Riel, right around here. Not only Riel, but No, or other big names that we know. The Taylor family was here too. And so basically there's a cluster of Métis family right in the East that are all connected East and West. And so on what basis would you argue then that there's no real Métis out East if you even don't know that history, if you don't even search it, if you don't even account for it, if you don't visit those elders that still remember their grandparents telling them that, yes, Métis was part and always is part of their identity. And that, yes, it is true that Louis Riel was going down the lake of Trente-Mille, down Maniwaki region, for example. Right? If we don't take the time to take those stories and to understand that Métis culture was a mobile culture, that we didn't, you know, stop at the door of Quebec as a province and says, oh, you know, we cannot enter Quebec. It's not like that, you know? But the rhetoric goes on in terms of like, well, these peoples are fake. But on what basis? On what grounds? Like imputing motives to people, psychologisms, basically on psyching people out, saying, well, I assume that these people are evil and have ill intentions toward the real Indigenous people, right? I don't know. It doesn't fly too well with me, I would say.
So one of the things that I, you know, you mentioned quite a few times is that this is more of a, it seems like a more of a politically motivated ideology. Where somehow their politics will be, or their political power will be threatened. But, you know, when we've talked about this in a previous episode, when we look at the other Indigenous cultures, and they see an increase in their population, they don't, you know, freak out and lose their mind and think there's a bunch of fake people. So why do you think it is that, are they so politically threatened that perhaps there might be a group that might rival them in size, and so the government will have to reduce their money and give it to somebody else? Or Like, where's this motivation, do you think? Because it doesn't seem to be culturally based. When I listen to elders, you know, we have Maria Campbell, for example, who I heard at a symposium saying, you know, there's Red River from Métis, there's Red River from other places too. And it seems to be a negating of elders and knowledge keepers and going more for just this nationalistic political ideology. Is that a fair statement to make?
Well, it seems to me the case, right? I mean, obviously, we're in front of ideology here, and nationalism is part of that ideology. Now, I'm calling these guys by a term neo-nationalists, because I believe that Riel was also claiming a form of nationalisms, but Riel was claiming an inclusive part of nationalisms. And I'm not saying that of my opinions, right? I've read letters of Louis Riel stating so, like, explicitly, that the word Métis would come about in terms of the contingency that you can have within the term Métis, that it would please everybody to create that new people. And Riel was also adamant in blessing Métis from all origin, and all, including the French-Canadian Métis, but also Métis from other origin, right? He was trying to reunite the Afri, the Métis, the Bois Brûlé, the Chico. I mean, there were so many names to describe the Métis, historically speaking, and now we have this kind of ideology aiming for one word and one word only. Like, hell bent on going like, I'm going to protect what Métis means, and whatever evidence is going to be thrown at me, I'm just going to say that the planet is still a flat disk, you know? So I'm just saying here, look, there's Métis connected east and west. Riel himself traveled east and west, was educated in Quebec. Gabriel Dumont, after the battles of Batoche, we have report of him coming in Quebec and saying, I'm happy to be among my people, because he was recognizing that French-Canadian and Métis had a lot in common. Now, does this mean that they are the same people? No, it doesn't mean that. And even Riel recognized it. What's the difference between the French-Canadian and the Métis? Well, there are many differences. There are many commonalities, historically speaking, but one of which is, and it's still to this day, is that the French-Canadian Métis, or the Métis, the Bois Brûlé, or the French Métis, per different names, are still attached to their dual culture in a unique way, right? The presence of Indigenous and French heritage coming together, creating that powerful synthesis that the colonial government has attempted to destroy it in so many ways. Now, I'm not inventing this. I'm not like a partisan of mélange and mixedness at the cost of the real nation that has to be homogenic and block-like. I'm saying this because Gabriel Dumont said that himself, and Riel said that himself about their culture, about the way in which they perceive what was Métis identity. Now, when you value this, when you value that heritage of being dual, and you see that as a strength, because it is a strength, and we can talk about this a little bit later. Historically speaking, it is a powerful strength. But when you see that as a vector of culture, when I meet you and you meet me, and you understand that we're Métis, and we're from different Indigenous background and different, you know, French background, or, for example, Scottish background, or then we understand that we are forming a people. We have commonalities into that despite our differences. And that is my reading of what I think the project of Louis Riel was, to unify those people in a political vehicle, to bring them into freedom, equality, and prosperity for the Métis people, right? And again, I'm not saying that because I wish that. I say that because there's letters of Louis Riel in 1885 saying there are Métis in the province of Eastern Canada that are suffering right now, I'm paraphrasing, of course, right? But that are suffering right now, and they deserve the same justice than the Métis of Manitoba. So basically, Louis Riel is not confused. He knows that there is Métis in Manitoba, Métis of the Northwest, but he also knows that there is Métis with capital M. No bullshit about that little M thing, you know?
Yeah.
With capital M, that there are Métis in the eastern province of Canada, and you wish the same right for them and the same justice, which means that you regard them as political people. I mean, I cannot believe today, guys, and I have to be blunt about this, but I went to university and I went with an anthropologist and studied, you know, some ways in which colonialism got to indigenous people. And one of those ways that we can see is that the mindset that the juridical system in the hands of colonizer had, basically the thrust of their argument was that they were coming to a country, assessing the so-called savages or the indigenous people, calling them as too primitive to have institutions like the so-called white man, and basically they're imposing their system on them, right? To make that long story short. Mm-hmm. But the thrust of the argument was to believe that these people were inferior because they didn't have like a political will, they didn't have political consciousness, they didn't have laws of their own, they didn't have the basic principles which makes them human beings. And what fascinates me and pisses me off at the same time is that now we have Métis people taking that kind of sociological angle top down on our own people and going around and says, well, these guys are real Métis and these guys are just fake. Why? Because these guys have inherited some kind of magical genes from 200 years ago that will say that, well, these guys have inherited political consciousness, while these guys out east, their ancestor was not even remotely aware of being half-breed or being Métis, despite the fact that they were treated differently as half-breed and Métis and sometimes suppressed by colonial authorities. No. We'll close our eyes wide shot on this, and we'll say that these people are lacking the ingredient of nationalism that allow us to be real and true. Now, I'm saying, guys, this is just like the so-called, you know, colonizing a tone that is just reapplied in our formula to match the institution of colonial power, right? To say, well, we are a nation in front of the colonizer, and we can assert ourselves. But meanwhile, we're hurting our own. And meanwhile, I don't think that we're respecting the full potential of our political views that were way more inclusive and way more fluid in their ability to escape repression and suppressions of our culture. In a nutshell.
No, I agree. I mean, we've talked many times about how, you know, it just seems like another form of colonization, their attitude towards Eastern-based Métis. When you bring up the things like this is what Riel said, like these aren't things that you're just making up and concocting in your own brain. These are, you're translating and you're researching Louis Riel, Gabriel Dumont, and other, you know, political Métis leaders and stuff like that. So how do these guys who prop Louis Riel up as their hero kind of
right.
Totally negate everything he said unless it conveniently fits their narrative? Like, do you have any insight on, like, how would a person, or I guess how does that even work? Because to me it seems irresponsible to say he's our hero, he's our founder, but we don't want to listen to the things he had to say.
Yes. Well, I would agree with that statement. You know, to go back to, sometimes, you know, I'm sorry, guys, it's late at night and I had a long day, and sometimes I can't go on a ramp, so to speak. So please interrupt me at any point, right? Saying, okay, Seb, just let's reframe it. I'm quite at ease here with you guys. But basically, what I was trying to suggest, you know, per your previous argument, is this. You said, why is there, and it's connected to your present question, why is there that suddenly there's a negation of that cross-continental political culture of the Métis, right, that I've tried to expose more carefully in a book that I co-authored, Songs Upon the River, where I'm trying to make a continental image of what could be Métis culture connected across regions, right? So we got to remember that the constitution that came in 1982 and the constitutionalization of the term Métis, right, was you know, a beacon of hope, but also did create a lot of problems. Basically, when the Constitution did occur, we moved from a politics of recognitions in which a lot of people were unite and unified, and right the day after we got in the Constitution of Canada, suddenly we got into the politics of identity. Why? Because this guy, in my opinion, this hero leader called
Daniels, right? Kyrie Daniels comes forward and tries to go with the visions of Louis Riel to unite all Métis across the country. So he goes from region to region, and he digs people out, and he's like, are you okay? What's your interest? And so on. And we have press paper here in Quebec showing Harry Daniels with the Métis from the Abitibi regions, with the Métis from different parts of Quebec, that did send their own freaking delegation in the 80s in Ottawa to argue for their rights, their trapping rights, their hunting rights, their fishing rights, the way in which the logging company was not respecting them on the ground and stuff like that. I mean, we have evidence of that. These guys calling themselves Métis going forward. Now, of course, for a guy like Daryl LaRue, these guys are fake, and these guys didn't understand their real identity, right? But, I mean, from our perspective, these guys have camp named Louis Riel, and they're going forward with Harry Daniel and negotiating that constitution. So I'm saying to these Métis that negates all the Métis in Quebec, where were you? I mean, where were you people about for you not to remember these times of unity? But then what happened is that you got included in constitutions in terms of names, right? And with these, this name now constitutionalized, come new privilege, new money, new resources, and new ways of controlling people, right? So after that, you see a big split happening, and in 1983 is the creation of the Métis National Council, basically a group that decide that the only real Métis will be out west on the Three Prairies province. And they decided to go their way and to start crafting arguments and lobbying that arguments with that doctrine that says the only real Métis are from Red River, and the only real Métis are connected to the diaspora of Red River.
You know, sorry, go ahead.
No, please go.
I was going to say, you know, one of the things that I think is really, one of the biggest shames of all this, I think, is that by following this path of this nationalist argument that they have, it negates hundreds of years of Métis history. And, you know, to me, that's some of the most fascinating history of the formation of what is now, you know, the United States and Canada. To me, that's a real shame that we're just writing off those hundreds of years before Red River as though they didn't exist. Mm. And really, like, I, you know, reading your book, Songs Upon the River and stuff, it was a really fascinating read because you don't hear that stuff anywhere else. And there's not a lot of knowledge about, you know, this city was formed by, you know, Métis people. And there was Métis people setting up, you know, trading forts in the West at this time. And so there's a lot of history there that's just basically going to be erased if the government and everybody else buys into this nationalist, you know, only Red River mentality.
Yeah, well, it's all a matter of, I would suggest to your argument, it's all a matter of principle, right? At the end of the day, a convenient political formula in our world often work by simplification, right? Homogeneity, simplification, almost these ideas that, let's be honest about it, we have inherited from Europe, you know? One nation under one God, under one language, and one race and one culture and whatever, right? That format of unicity, of homogenizing, of kind of this narrative by which you get to think of yourself in a specific and similar way. Well, with the Métis, it doesn't work like that, according to Songs Upon the River and according to what I'm seeing in evidence and in my own culture, right? I mean, we are a culture that doesn't need to be homogenic. We are a culture that goes with diversity from the get-go, that goes with diversity as a strength from the get-go, that goes for pluralisms, pluralities of language, right? French, English, Gaelic, different indigenous language. We've seen that in Canadian village, as they used to call them, or different Métis settlement, in which people sometimes were talking up to 11 different languages. Wow. Now, of course, I've been accused of, like, being only like pro-French. I've been accused also of being like a hidden separatist, and because, you know, basically we're saying that French was an important aspect of the Métis culture in terms of its dominance in the fur trade.
But we also realize that as important as French were all these indigenous language, that we're also creating Métis culture. But so basically we have to realize that this is a strength and we can drive our politics from this. We don't have to adopt this standardized, sterilized, nationalistic narrative that fits the grid, I would say, of the romantic notion of what is a nation, you know, as this natural entity born out of the soil, of blood and soil. It's not like that, not for the Métis. It was made along different alliances with different indigenous people coming together by networks of trade and kinship, all connected, and then created this beautiful, strong, and very powerful culture, in my opinion. Right? So if we go with that, and I believe that this is the vision of Lou Riel, and this is the vision that Harry Daniels had as well, then we got to try to defend it, and we got to try to, in my opinion, to honor it. Now, when 1983 came, and then there were a big split along the Métis movement in terms of politics of identity, then suddenly you have people that says, well, now we have a group of Métis that only wants to be Métis out west, and they're using constitutional privilege to that party. And then you have these Métis saying to the other Métis, no, you have this backsided. It's actually you guys that are taking the constitutional right, because now that term has been in the Constitution. Now you guys are fake, and you want to be Métis only to bit, you know, to bite at our privileges. And so we have a narrative that will lead us, in my opinion, nowhere. Nowhere, because this type of rhetoric, like you suggested earlier, in my opinion, serves only the most powerful at this point, and leaves some of the most destitute, poor, unrepresented communities I have came across when I was, you know, I did travel Canada in different directions. And when I was breaking bread with the Métis out east and out west, I see some of the most formidable people, but, you know, living in poverty still, having no resources to education and the means to defend themselves by adequate lawyers and an adequate, like, expert and historians that could help them to really shape their defense. None of that. And meanwhile, everybody's busy on the internet, on Twitter, in universities, in hurting each other, right? You're not this, you're not that, you're not Métis enough, you're not fiddling enough, you're not... And this madness is affecting our kids. It affects students that I'm receiving in my office weeks after weeks saying, Sebastian, am I good enough? Am I Métis enough? I come from Acadia, do I deserve a place at the table? Or even people from Sault Ste. Marie, and even half-breed, so to speak, from half-breed family from Red River, saying to me, am I Métis? I'm like, what is it with this madness? What is it? I mean, at one point, we'll have to come and realize our strength and the ability of our culture to face the challenges head-on, or what?
You know? No, I agree with you, and we've talked many times on the podcast about that, about... You know, we're so wrapped up in this identity issue. I mean, for us here in Alberta, there's a community that we've visited and we've had on the podcast, and they are, like you said, living in poverty. They're not doing well, and there's nobody fighting for them. But right. If you go on the internet, yeah, it's you can find a lot of vitriol about who is and who's not Métis. Now, I understand we're getting close to running out of time, but I understand that you have just received a grant or to continue your research and to further your research. Maybe do you want to tell us a little bit about that and just let everybody know, I guess, where you're, you know, looking to go with the research?
Well, it's a bit of an excellent news. You know, the news was released today on Louis Riel's Day as well, so I'm pretty happy and stoked about this. Yet there, so I've secured a research grant with SHRC, which is a federal agency that works on, you know, that works to distribute money for research based on merit, and not only that, but, you know, on transparency, because we are evaluated by our peers on what could be a sustainable project. And in that project, I have suggested that we need to study carefully the history of the Métis people in Quebec, because there's so much bashing right now that we got to get to the bottom of that argument, right? And so in going into the archives for the last past 2 years, I did find documents that shows and indicates that the government, the colonial authorities, have refused to protect Métis in parts of Quebec that were trying to form collectivities or communities, knowing fairly well and identifying them collectively as Métis. So I want to study this problem per fiduciary responsibility. I want to see what went down into that politics that have kind of created a mess for the Métis people in Quebec and as well as other places, right? Because you can, after that, take that argument and run with it in different parts of Canada. But here's the important part, is that if the government can be, if it can be shown that the government has been responsible for not protecting Métis communities that were well identified in some region, and then ask them per its Paoli test to prove that there is an historical community, I'm seeing a big problem in that, you know, into that conflict.
Absolutely.
I mean, you cannot ask the Métis people to prove their community if you have tried for 200 years for different actions, which are luckily sometimes documented. It's a matter of finding them. And then you cannot reverse and ask them to prove that community that you've tried so hard to suppress. And so basically the Métis in Quebec, as well as other places of Canada, are finding a great challenge in front of themselves, because they are forming what I call a diaspora. Métis have been a cultural diaspora living free, first through the fur trade, and after that, you know, after the fur trade era, through different places. But Métis were excluded from reserves, excluded from treaties. Some did got admission to reserve, and some did got admission to treaties. So there's shift in terms of identities. And again, that's another subject that we could have touched, but Métis identities, historically speaking, versus what they called Indian identity per different names, is not necessarily kind of unique as well, or in block identity, right? There's movement, there's fluidity in those identities. So what we need is careful cultural marker to understand what is Métis culture. And then we have to understand what is a diaspora, what is the distributions of Métis people across this country. And then we have to understand that if these people did suffer colonial interventions, our politics, or even legal aspect, then we have to make that clear. And I believe that this will help the, you know, the reconciliation that we need within the Métis culture and the people between East and West. If we realize through that research that although we are not necessarily the same per region, right? We have evolved differently in different regions, and that's fine. I mean, we have certain fights in common. We have certain things in common. We experience colonialisms in very specific way and in very similar way as well. So,
one final question there, Seb. When can we? How long is this grant for? Like, we're very excited to hear that you're gonna be doing this research. How long do you have to be able to investigate all this?
Well, it's a 2 years grant. It's 2 years, but there's already paper on the way about, you know, like, for example, showing these Métis communities that were identified, or people that were identified as Métis, Bois Brûlé, or even Michif out in Western Quebec, for example, where I did some digging. And so now it's a matter of putting all these documents together and crafting them and giving them back to the people, right, so that they can understand better for themselves what has been their suffering, historically speaking, and as well as legally speaking, and the challenge that they have in front of themselves now.
That is exciting.
That will create peace. Yeah.
So when do you think those papers would be made available?
Well, there's already glimpse in the paper that I've published on the LaRue question, because I have given hints of some of my findings where, you know, at the end of the paper, I'm saying, how come LaRue is not aware that trapping license were giving at a different price for the half breed in Quebec, for example? How come he's not aware
of Father Bellefeuille describing that all along the fur trades post in Quebec, these people were identified as midshif and with similar cultural traits than the people in Red River. How come he's not aware that there's the different families or the different midshif families protecting Louis Riel in Western Quebec when Riel is in exile and cannot be West, you know, because he has a bounty on his head. And strangely enough, he comes in Quebec and other places as well to seek protection. How come he's not aware of that culture and that history, yet claims that he can go around and just taxing people of being all of them fake? So in my paper, I have given a glimpse of that. But there's a further publication that will come and that will sustain that story and make sure that the evidence can be shared so that people can make their own minds about this and hone it.
Well, one final thing I have for you, Seb, and it's actually a quick question to answer, but does Darryl LaRue identify as Métis? Does he consider himself part of Métis culture?
Well, to the best of my understanding, and from what I got from his conference, he said that he has indigenous ancestry, but that doesn't make him Métis, right? So he wants to build on the fact that he himself has French and indigenous ancestry, yet he's not Métis. He wants to make himself like the example of what somebody should and shouldn't do. I have argued in my paper that this is completely going into against culture in terms of an argument, because you can have two different person from the same lineage, and one can go Métis in culture, or First Nation for that matter, and the other would go simply Canadian, right? So that's why self-identity is very important, crucial in connection with what is culture. But he wants to go by like these kinds of rhetoric and almost inverted blood quantum, right? Where he will say, well, the Québécois has kind of an ancestry way too far along, and it's 10 generation, and it's just one drop. It doesn't hold a road, you know, at the light, for example, of the Paoli family that made the Supreme case in 2003, when you know that their ancestor was six generations ago, no endogamic practice, so no marriage between Métis family. And so did we judge so harshly the Paoli? Of course not. He's Métis. We're happy that, he did secure some right, although there's now issues about this. But see, that rhetoric of that 1%, of that too far, of that you're never perfect enough, and for Quebec only or for the East only, seems to me very problematic when we think about it.
Yeah, I think we're going to wrap up here, but I think one of my biggest problems with, in particular, Darryl LaRue, is that by not self-identifying as Métis or not identifying as Métis at all, in my opinion, it kind of makes him ineligible to really speak on Métis culture. I mean, you can read about it in a book all you want, but the truth is, you know, you grew up Métis on... a lot of people did, and I think those are the people that we need to start listening to. And you know, I don't know any other Indigenous group that would allow somebody who doesn't identify as who they are to then tell them who they are and who is not authentically, you know, First Nation. So it's an interesting thing that I think Métis are allowing a guy who doesn't identify as Métis to speak on their behalf, but. So I want to thank you, Seb, for coming on. I mean, I feel like we could talk probably for hours. There was a lot of things you said tonight that really, honestly, were just fascinating for me. I don't know how you felt, Jason, but it was very informative.
Yeah,
for me.
Me as well. We could probably keep Seb on here for about 8 more hours.
Yeah, well, I'm sorry. I took so much of your time in talking. This is at the end of the day, right? And on this subject, I'm quite passionate, and it's rightfully so. You know, it's our, I think it's the most important stuff we need to talk about. But like I said, some people said that the obstacle is the path. So I don't despair. I see that as a necessary road for us to take so that we can better understand ourselves and eventually make peace for our children, right? So I'm hoping that in the future, like my children and the children of my adversary will play together, right? And understand that we can be different Métis, but we're Métis nevertheless, and that using the word Métis per different, you know, cultural expressions that came in time doesn't mean that I'm going to take anything away from Red River. Like, you got to remember that many people in the East used to look up to the West, right? And so it's like, these guys did it. These guys, you know, like, they're inspirational for us, and they're the same. And Louis Riel was traveling across the country, and we remember him. So I think that we are going nowhere if we don't have Red River, a strong Red River leadership and a strong leadership from Central Canada into this.
I believe this with all my heart. Is this a matter of like reconnecting the dots and making sure that we can now, you know, pulsate together into doing this, right?
Absolutely. I think that's a great final way to leave this. And I don't know if you have any final thoughts, Jason, or...
No, just really appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule, Seb, to come talk to us. And we really look forward to more of the work that you're doing, you know, because we feel it's, you know, vitally important.
Well, thank you, Jason, and thank you. You know, for the show that you're doing is extremely important, and a lot of people are listening to your show out east, west, north, so I heard. So it's a great thing that you're doing and a great service to our people.
Well, I enjoy doing it. I enjoy the podcast, but I really enjoy having you on, and hopefully we can have you on again in the future when maybe, you know, another paper comes out or, you know, you're looking to do another book. I definitely look forward to that. And once again, I want to thank you. And for all our listeners, I think that's it. The jig is up.
Long live the peak. Hey, my late cooking came from Kawaka to Express. Real warrior woman, probably popping moves there. It's poor man's if you want to talk the language. 100 clicks north and Virginia's the rest. You still got to be a chief to